There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
It is time for Book Off. Now, on Book Off, what we do is we ask three bookworms to come in and debate the worst or best of something in literature. So before I tell you what our Book Off today is, I'd like to introduce our lovely bookworms. So Rachel Hamilton, you've already heard from. Thomas Billinghurst is in the studio again. Hi, welcome back.
Thank you very much.
Would you mind introducing yourself to the listeners?
Of course not. I'm the digital editor of Debonair Magazine, men's luxury lifestyle magazine, and an English teacher in a former life.
And Rehan Khan, who's still with us after our chat about writing books. Just remind any listeners who've just tuned in who you are.
Yes, I'm the author of some historic fiction, which is going to be out next year, Mission Impossible in the 16th Century.
There we go. Now, our Book Off today is about some terrible parental figures in literature, and it's the dad's edition, because I think you've all chosen terrible fathers in fiction. And I was going to keep this to adult fiction, but we are mixing up a little bit today and we have some children's fiction in there as well. So in order of publication, let's go through who you're going to be championing as the worst dad in literature. Nice. Thomas.
So I get to start. Fabulous. okay, so I put it to you that there is no father figure, potentially no character, that is responsible for bringing more chaos and destruction into any world other than King Lear. I'll start with a very, very brief introduction to the plot of Lear and where it all goes wrong. So the start of King Lear, the play, he decides, this is an aging monarch in charge of a kingdom in the 8th century, and he decides to divide his kingdom up among his offspring, which are three daughters. And the totally rational and sane way he devises of doing this is by coming up with a love test. He asks his three daughters to tell him how much they love him. And depending on how flattering they are, he will apportion to them an appropriate size of his kingdom to them, which immediately throws into the idea of favoritism. But the reason that it's terrible parenting is because he's blind to the truth. And he has a favorite daughter, Cordelia, and she refuses to take part in the love test, and says to him, "I will say nothing because I cannot say to you in words how much I love you. It's beyond the realms of comprehension and abstract nouns, which Goneril and Regan use lavishly." And from there, from that decision to divide his kingdom thusly, he is thus responsible for the blinding of his best pal, if you had pals in the 8th century, the Earl of Gloucester, with a horse spur shoe, which is one of the more graphic moments of all of Renaissance drama. Gloucester's subsequent madness, his own madness, the madness of Edgar, Gloucester's son, the ascension of Edmund, one of the worst and blackest Machiavells in all of Shakespearean drama, the death of, in no particular order, Goneril, Regan, Albany, Gloucester himself, Edmund, Cordelia when she returns after being banished from France in the arms of Lear, who then dies himself. So that's eight. Oh, and Oswald, nine deaths, all of which stems from his decision to divide his kingdom among his daughters. Now, what makes him a reprehensible father is not necessarily the love test in itself. It's the fact that he doesn't repent until Cordelia comes back. And one of my favourite lines from the play that shows he recognises what it's like to be offspring in the world, which makes it even worse, is his, "When we are born, we cry that we are come to this great stage of fools." And we won't do the practical midwife bringing a child into the world and making sure they cry to make sure they're awake part. But the metaphorical and the poetic message is that this world is dark and nihilistic and bleak enough. So why wouldn't you offer the love and affection that you should do as a parent? So he's recognition of that, notwithstanding his potential madness and the modern interpretation of his dementia, which actually doesn't suit my argument, so we'll say that's nonsense for now, makes him cognizant of the fact that he's been a poor father. And the psychological damage that he has imparted on Goneril and Regan, who are the evil two daughters, is only planted in them because of the fact that he's lavished praise and love on Cordelia. And their neglect is actually a manifestation, or becomes a manifestation for them of trying to regain that lost time. I'm rambling, aren't I? You're looking at the time. So yeah, good luck, Mr. Wormwood. Good luck, Heathcliff. I don't think you can top that.
So opening statements continue with Heathcliff in order of publication. So we've gone from King Lear, Thomas Billinghurst championing King Lear there, and you are championing Heathcliff.
Okay, so Heathcliff is the male protagonist of Emily Bronte's novel Wuthering Heights. He's best known as this archetypal tortured romantic hero whose all-consuming passions destroy him and everyone around him due to his undying love for Catherine Earnshaw. And that's the issue, because readers tend to focus on this love that ends all love and his kind of mesmerising, swarthy good looks. And they forget the fact that there's a vengeful second half of the book in which he becomes the worst father figure in history and basically takes out the pain he feels at losing Kathy by torturing children. So he's not a great man. His terrible fathering not only extends to his own son, poor sickly Linton, it also extends to Hareton, the boy who sees him as a father figure because Heathcliff has destroyed his actual father, and also to young Catherine, who is the daughter of the woman he loved and becomes his daughter-in-law. And when I was thinking about who to put forward as the worst dad in literature, I thought about a lot of people and I thought about what it is that I would use to measure bad dadness. And I think that it's a deliberate badness. I think there's a lot of bad dads who are neglectful or who are selfish, and so their children suffer. But in Heathcliff's case, it's a deliberate decision to abuse these children psychologically, physically, and just in every way possible.
Objection, Your Honour.
We're not allowed objections just yet.
I take back my objection.
Okay. All right. Because I just want to introduce all the dads before we start arguing. So, Rayhan, who are you going to
champion? Sure. Let me make the opening statement. So, look, this particular individual is a self-centered narcissist who thinks that he's the smartest deal maker around. He doesn't read anything and he tells his daughter, "Why do you read books? You can get everything you want from watching television." And every evening, he takes lots of junk food and fast food, sits down in front of the television and watches TV. He has a really dodgy business. He doesn't declare his taxes either. He's known for mis-selling. And when he behaves like a bully if you kind of push him, and he becomes aggressive when he's challenged. Now, I know listeners might be thinking, well, this does sound like the chap who's currently residing at Pennsylvania Avenue in Washington. And yes, you could maybe suggest that. But actually, no, this is probably his role model. And that's Mr. Wormwood of Matilda and of the book by Roald Dahl with the same name, Matilda.
And I allowed each person on the show, each guest with their evil dad or bad father figure, to use a clip, an audio clip, as kind of supporting evidence. Now, we'll play yours when we come back, Lear and Heathcliff. But for now, let's listen to why Mr. Wormwood from Matilda is utterly terrible.
See this junker? I paid $100 for her. She's got 120,000 miles on her. Transmission shot, bumpers have fallen off. What do I do with her? I sell her. We really should weld these bumpers on, but that takes time, equipment, money. So, we use super glue instead. Go ahead, put it on there.
Won't it fall off?
Definitely.
Isn't that dangerous?
Not to me, okay? Transmission. The sawdust quiets the gears and lets the engine run as sweet as a nut for a couple of miles.
Daddy, that's cheating.
Of course it's cheating. Nobody ever got rich being honest. 20 years ago, we could turn the numbers back by hand. But here, take my hat. But the feds like to test the ingenuity of the American businessman. Two-directional drill. You run it backwards, the numbers go down. Watch your speedometer.
Cool.
See?
Yeah. Daddy, you're a crook.
What?
This is illegal.
Yeah, keep drilling. Do you make money? Do you have a job?
No, but don't people need good cars? Can't you sell good cars, Dad?
Listen, you little wiseacre. I'm smart, you're dumb. I'm big, you're little. I'm right, you're wrong. And there's nothing you can do about it.
Mr. Wormwood there from Matilda. That is, of course, the film adaptation of the book, which I think is awesome as well as the book. I'm going to kick off, I think, with Rachel's clip.
Can I justify it?
You can justify it. Do you want to justify it now or afterwards?
Do you want to play it and then I'll justify
okay,
it?
Okay, let's hear. Kate Bush singing Wuthering Heights there. And why on earth did we play that?
Okay, the reason for this is because, as I say, everybody talks about Heathcliff in his role as a romantic hero, and nobody mentions the fact that he's a terrible father. And so looking for clips to demonstrate the awfulness of his fathering, I couldn't find any. And I love Kate Bush, so it just seemed a good excuse to put her on the radio and wave my arms around.
So that is your justification for playing?
Sadly so. Please don't hold it against me when it comes to judging.
I thought it
wins.
Was a nice little musical interlude, although Thomas, you're nodding your head.
No, I thought it was good. I think you get comedy points for it, definitely.
Okay, brilliant. Now moving on to something less comedic, because here is a clip from a King Lear adaptation featuring Emma Thompson and Anthony Hopkins, and it'll give you an idea as to the drama and the language that we're going for here.
We have divided in three our kingdom. It is our fast intent to shake all cares and business from our age, conferring them on younger strengths. What can you say to draw a third, more opulent than your sisters?
Nothing, my lord.
Where's my daughter?
By day and night he wrongs me. Every hour he flashes into crime offs, all at odds. I'll not endure it.
Who is it that can tell me who I am?
Why not by the hand, sir? How have I offended?
You are old. You should be ruled and led by some discretion that discerns your state.
Thou art my daughter, rather a disease that's in my flesh.
So yeah, King Lear, though, clearly very angry and disturbed. And one of the contenders for Bad Dad in Fiction Award here on the show on Book Off today. Now, you wanted, when we were doing our opening statements, there was something that you wanted to say, Thomas, and you wanted to object to something. What did you want to object to?
There's lots I want to say.
go for it.
That's my fault. I will pick up on Heathcliff being an intentionally bad father. Because mm-hmm. I think that comes back to the point that I was saying about Regan and Goneril. Feeling like they have to constantly make up for something that they have lacked in life, that benevolent parental figure. Heathcliff's cards are marked from day one, from the fact that he gets overlooked for the position in the first place for Edgar for the inheritance. And that's that same kind of psychological lack that spurs people on to do bad things. So I don't think you can necessarily say that he is entirely acting of his own free will. I think part of Bronte's craft and art with the novel is to show how people can be compelled to do things from previous traumas, however dark and bleak they are, no matter what emotion that is, whether that's love, despair, loss. So I think there's an iota of sympathy to be had for Heathcliff in that he exacts his... I'm not saying it's right. It's morally reprehensible, of course. But I think that he's a more sympathetic character than just saying he is intentionally a terrible and abusive father. And that's why, for me, that's why Lear is a worse father, because he should realise the error of his ways, and he doesn't until it's too late. Heathcliff is cognizant of that the whole way through.
Can I defend?
You can. Yes, this is about you of battling it out to convince me.
I will eventually round on Mr. Wormwood as well.
Yes, I know. I'm fully prepared for that. Carry on.
So that is an argument you could make. However, you could also make the counter argument, which is that a lot of the things that Heathcliff does to these kids were done to him, and so he should know better. So, for example, he spent his whole life begrudging the fact that he didn't get a proper education, that he, you know, that he wasn't taught. And so when Hareton becomes, he almost inherits Hareton because Hindley dies, and so Heathcliff becomes his father figure, he sends away his tutor and he deliberately decides to make him the most ignorant person in existence as a revenge. But it's not a revenge on this child, it's a revenge on his father. And so the quote is, he'll never be able to emerge from this coarseness and ignorance. I've got him faster than his scoundrel of a father secured me, and lower. We'll see if one tree won't grow as crooked as another with the same wind to twist it. And so that is a definite intent to exact revenge using the child that he's supposed to be fathering. And so, yes, you can argue that he has been damaged himself, but then you can argue that about anyone who commits any bad intent, that something in their past or in their makeup has caused them to behave that way. So I don't think it works as a defence.
Okay. Mr. Wormwood, I'm not addressing you specifically.
I do look a bit like him, no. I suppose. Yeah.
What do you think about this idea that if we have sympathy for these characters, does it change the fact that they are a bad father? I mean, do you feel any, can we not feel any sympathy at all for Mr. Wormwood and his own upbringing?
I think it's a question of, well, he's probably acting out what he saw when he was growing up. So yes, you can have probably some sympathy in that. And maybe he is a product of the society in which he's grown up as well. So you can have some sympathy in that. But ultimately, you know, you are responsible for your own decisions, right?
Yeah.
But I would like to hear your argument against Mr. Wormwood, because I mean, come throw your best punch and let's see. I want to come back on that. So
you
come
are within reach as well.
Yeah, you are definitely.
It's the fact that he's just a trickster more than a malevolent force, and I think probably it's the way that it was packaged by Roald Dahl, and it's got a real, you know, comic edge to it, and so has the film, and changing the odometer and the speedo and that kind of thing. I just see him more as a comic hero, a comic figure who's unaware of his bad intentions. I don't think he's intentionally bad. I think that's just how he is. And he signs the papers at the end. He does have a good core underneath the moral fibre.
Carry on, sorry.
Go on.
I'm not the one debating here.
No, yeah, no, please
do. I would also say that a lot of the examples given of Mr. Wormwood's badness are towards other people rather than Matilda. With Matilda, a lot of it is just ignorance and the fact that they're so very different. He simply doesn't understand her and is just kind of brusque and neglectful.
Yeah, I mean, look, so I'd say that, okay, yes, he's not nice towards her. He tells the Trunchbull that she's, you know, she's trouble. And she ends up in a choky poor girl. He's an awful role model as a father to his son. But, you know, I was actually thinking about this and what was Mr. Wormwood's impact to society? And I was kind of playing around with the numbers in my head and I thought, well, Mr. Wormwood's a dodgy car salesman, right? Mm. And imagine he has a career selling dodgy cars for, say, 40 years. Okay, every week his dealership sells, say, 4 cars. So every year they're going to end up selling something like 208 dodgy cars. And these dodgy cars, remember, the odometer has been turned backwards, right? So they're running on a very inefficient kind of fuel consumption. So that's around 8,300 cars across a career of 40 years of selling dodgy cars. Now, I started calculating what was the environmental impact of each inefficient car. And looking at the impact on pollution and people's health and kids are suffering asthma and so on, I calculated that about each car was detrimental to the environment by about $1,000, but it could be 10,000. So if we take 8,300 cars times $1,000, that's an impact of $8.3 million. But if we go by 10, that's $83 million. So what can $8.3 million actually buy you? Well, that could actually buy you, based on a teacher's salary in the UK, it could buy you 278 Miss Honeys. 278. And if we go for the factor of 10, that's 2,780 Miss Honeys. You've been a teacher, Miss Honey, taking a class of 30 children. Can you imagine the environmental and the societal benefit of actually employing that many Miss Honeys as opposed to Mr. Wormwood. I mean, I rest my case. There is no more case. We should just stop now. That's
your commitment to this debate, I'm just going to say, fills me with utter joy. What were you about to
say?
I
mean, that was spectacular. Statistics alone, like imaginary statistics at that, phenomenal. But one thing I will say is that is a societal impact. That is not an impact on his own daughter. And as entertaining as I found that, and I applaud you, I think you are deviating ever so slightly from the topic.
No, but that he's a role model, right? He's a role model for all fathers, and so it's a huge impact, whereas if it's just one child, the impact is less.
You see, with Heathcliff, I don't need to go into how many dodgy motors he sold because I can give specific examples of the way he's impacted on his children. Therefore, I would say that he has a stronger case for being the worst dad in literature.
So I'm going to come back to Heathcliff again. So the thing is, Lear has a favourite. And that, as any offspring, or more than one, anyone that isn't an only child will tell you, if you feel like you are inferior, insignificant, or not the favourite in any family setup, that is sowing the seeds for long-term psychological trauma. Just ask my sister. she's the favourite, I'll just clarify.
It got dark and personal.
It did. I've waited for this platform for a long time. But Leah consciously has a favourite child. And what sort of example does that set? What do you expect from your two other daughters other than subversion and waiting for the perfect opportunity to strike to cast you out onto a storm so you go mad, you lose your kingdom, and it's there for them to take? You can't expect anything else.
But then at least he's there having a favourite. Whereas for Heathcliff, Linton, he's not even in Linton's life for the first 12 years. And while you could argue that he wasn't able to, at the same time he's interfering in Hareton's life. So therefore he would have even more of a psychological impact on Linton by just not being around.
You have one final segment to convince me of the badness of your dads. Not your actual dads, that would be slightly awkward for radio.
My dad's lovely.
One thing I want us to talk about is this idea of neglect, because it's quite clear from what we've heard, particularly about Heathcliff and King Lear as well, and also Mr. Wormwood in his capacity as a crook, that they're all quite awful characters. But neglect is something that we particularly see with all of them, but with Mr. Wormwood. Now, I would want your thoughts. My argument is that neglect is just as crucial to talk about when we're talking about bad fathers in literature as, say, the terrible things that they did do. It's more about what they didn't do sometimes. What are your thoughts on that? Would you like to start, Rehan?
Yeah, I would agree. I think sometimes it's what you say and it's also what you don't say, and it's what you do and what you don't do. And Mr. Wormwood certainly tells Matilda, you know, she shouldn't be reading books, but he also then doesn't do a lot of things. He doesn't ever hug his daughter, doesn't give her a pat on the head. He kind of leaves her to the Trunchbull and Truncheon Hall and, you know, all that goes on there. So I think if it wasn't for Matilda's very special powers, I think she would end up in a very sorry state and she'd end up as someone else's problem. So I think, you know, I think we've all seen kind of fathers like that who are probably so self-centered, only thinking about themselves. They don't think about their children. Mr. Wormwood is a prime example of that completely.
One thing that you said earlier, Thomas, was that he signs the papers so that she can be, is it adopted by Miss Honey at the end? And that demonstrates some redemption on his part.
Just a goodness that you don't necessarily see in Heathcliff.
This, I'm trying not to step into the debate, but I always saw that as... Rehan, do you want to...
Yeah, well, look, I think he's doing it for his own good because the police sirens are going off in the background and he just wants to get out of there. But also, that's what makes him a complete character, because if a character is all evil, they're actually a bit boring and they've got to have a glimmer of light in them. And likewise, if a character is all good, they need to have a glimmer of darkness, which makes Mr. Wormwood a much more compelling and evil dad than the other two.
Thomas.
I just think he has a good core. It would have taken him less time to pick Matilda up by the back of her dress, throw her in the car and drive off to get out of get away from the police. But he didn't. He did something that she wanted, Miss Honey wanted, and was for the greater good.
Rachel, thoughts?
On Mr. Wormwood or on neglect?
Also on the concept of neglect.
Well, I think that neglect in most books is something that is accidental or unthought about. What mm-hmm. makes Heathcliff uniquely awful is he is deliberately neglectful. And I'm going to give three examples. So one of them is when Linton clearly requires medical attention, and he is told Linton requires medical attention for his tuberculosis consumption, and he refuses to call medical help, saying that he's not going to spend a penny on the worthless creature.
Survival of the fittest.
Decides to neglect him, and he welcomes his son's death because it enables him to get his hands on the Grange. That's one example. Then with the girl that's become his daughter and becomes his daughter-in-law, he locks her up for 5 days and nights when her own father is dying and refuses to let her out, leaving her utterly neglected for 5 days. And then with Hareton, as we've said, he refuses to let any kind of educator, teacher, or anyone that will help him become a non-offensive, non-kind of grunty creature into Wuthering Heights. So not only is he neglectful, but he has opportunities to be not neglectful and doesn't take them. Awful.
That's a strange door policy, isn't it? Grunty people only. You can't come in unless you're grunty.
I might have that.
And how is Leah neglectful?
Okay, he neglects the truth, most essentially. The truth that Cordelia, at the very start of the play, says to him, I cannot pretend to love you any more than my daughters say. And it's a myopic approach. Number one, neglect. He didn't read Ye Old Good Book of Parenting, which is, you know, basic medieval parenting guidelines right there. So that's number one. Number two, he doesn't listen to the truth.
Is that available from good booksellers anywhere?
It's at Waterstones in the UK. I don't know if it's made its way out to Cunaconia yet. Yeah. The pages are all yellowed though. The fact that I think the idea of neglect is a strange one, because it's maybe what you do rather than don't do that sometimes is more pertinent. So he gets to the stage with Goneril and Regan where they have thrown him out, and he could repent and apologise to her and bring, you know, row back a little bit. But instead of saying that, he hopes that she is unable to have children, and does it in such fierce, violent imagery that it's the opposite of neglect. In fact, it's acerbic and it's in her face, and it's the sort of damning rhetoric that is only enhancing and worsening her psychological trauma. So the neglect of the truth, first of all, but then neglecting what his daughters crave, which is honesty, reconciliation, he refuses to do. And he keeps pushing until this whole world, as the fool says, out went the lights and we were left darkling. This whole world is turned into flames and fire. And it's this nihilistic, one of the most existentially depressing plays because of his refusal to listen to the truth, and because of his inability to see beyond himself. One more thing I will say, we were talking about larger social impacts, and Rayhan mentioned the parallels between Mr. Wormwood and a certain commander-in-chief. It was interesting to me a couple of years ago, or about a year ago, when the resident of at Pennsylvania Avenue held a roundtable with his cabinet, all of which were invited only after what they were going to say was vetted by him. And they were invited to tell him what a wonderful job he was doing in front of the press. Now, if that isn't King Lear in the 21st century, I don't know what is. And the reputation of the man with funny hair and an orange face is not exactly a great example of parenting either.
But he's based on Mr. Wormwood, because Mr. Wormwood has orange hair. Remember, he has orange hair in the book.
And doesn't care about the oil.
It's a role model.
Yeah, there you
go. So, I mean, that's it. You know, my case is closed.
Is it? Is there a rebuttal that you want to give at all?
No, I think, you know, when I looked at the financial impact, you know, the fact that we could employ 2,780 Miss Honeys, I think that should be enough for every parent to say yes. Mr. Wormwood is the winner.
I think you've broken Rachel.
It's just such excellent arguing, but wrong.
Okay, I think unless there are any final statements to make, I think I'm going to have to come to a decision.
Can I make another one?
You may.
One thing that makes Heathcliff even worse than the other is that he does a lot of this for his own benefit. So he locks Cathy up for those 5 days because he wants to inherit Thrushcross. I can't even say it properly. Thrushcross. Manor, Grange, whatever it's called, sorry. And Hareton, he treats badly so he can basically take over Wuthering Heights. And so his actions are deliberately bad and for his own benefit, which makes him even worse.
Okay.
Annabelle, just remember.
Mm-hmm.
As flies to wanton boys, are we to the gods? You get to decide now which flies you swipe and which
you've
you
just
don't.
Lost about 10 points.
I'm a better fly.
And actually, I've gone this far, so I'll do it as well, just for the listeners' benefit. While we were off air, Annabelle decided to champion Mr. Wormwood and have a favourite child in the studio. So you now know where this verdict is coming from. So I went so far, I might as well go all the way.
So, right, so Thomas's ploy is clearly if he loses, he's going to make it look like he's lost because I am King Lear at this point.
Pretty much.
Right, great. Thank you so much.
You look
so
a little
much.
Bit better than Lear, though.
Thanks. Thank you. This is a great day for
Not
me.
Flatter the judge.
So we've had a couple of messages come in before I make my decision about who listeners think the worst parental figures in fiction are. This isn't just dads, they've broadened it. And it's the mums, really, that are coming out on top. So Mrs. Bennet, Muhammad says, is utterly awful from Pride and Prejudice by Jane Austen. Asma says Hamlet's mum ain't great at all. Shakespeare coming up again.
Gertrude,
there.
Absolutely. Gertrude. Terrible mum.
And now I have to make my decision. And I don't have... Stop raising your hand, Rachel, please. So we've got Mr. Wormwood.
Who's your favourite? And you work with this lady here as well.
He's never coming back again. Mr. Wormwood from Roald Dahl's Matilda. King Lear from King Lear by William Shakespeare. And Heathcliff from Wuthering Heights. And I am going to go with... No, I'm going to go with Heathcliff.
Yay!
Oh, okay. Congratulations, Rachel. Congratulations.
Congratulations, well Heathcliff, really. He does it all on his own.
And I think it's because of... Yes, I know King Lear neglects the truth, and there is so much that's awful in that play, and so much that is awful about Mr. Wormwood. But with Heathcliff, that the concrete examples are just... They're just too many, and I can't ignore them. When they're laid out in front of you... So if I was actually judging this in a court of law, I would always, like, I would choose Heathcliff every time. I think it would be impossible to ignore the evidence for Heathcliff. So that is who I am choosing. But I thought that you all did remarkably well. If I didn't have to choose a winner, I'd say you were all winners.
That doesn't work.
But there's only one.
But thank you so much. That was absolutely wonderful having you on the show. Before we go, some King Lear facts that I found that I thought were interesting. King Lear contains more references to animals in the natural world than any other Shakespeare play. It also contains one of only two references to football in Shakespeare, thou base football player. The other footballing reference comes in which play? Does anybody know?
No football existed.
The Comedy of Errors. There you go.
So an insult is thou base football player.
Apparently. Like apparently.
It's still an insult as well.
Okay. So the winner of our Book Off debate today was Rachel Hamilton with Heathcliff from Wuthering Heights.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.